Welcome to the Kansas Cyclist Podcast, part of the Kansas Cyclist website and the eRow Podcast Network. Podcasts that inform by focusing both on the news and the people behind the news. My name is Edward eRow, and together with Randy Reza, webmaster of the Kansas Cyclist, we are your host for Episode 3 for Monday, May 18th, 2009. In this episode, we will be interviewing Alan Appel, who is from Topeka, Kansas, and is working on a proposal for updating some of the outdated or non-existent Kansas statutes related to bicycling. We also have a short interview with Deb Ridgway, Bicycle and Pedestrian Coordinator for the City of Kansas City, Missouri, who we caught after her presentation to the Sierra Club in Kansas City, Missouri on May 5th. The Kansas Cyclist Podcast provides news and information about bicycling in Kansas and neighboring states. The podcast is a new feature of the Kansas Cyclist website, which is found at www.kansascyclist.com. Links to the Kansas Cyclist Podcast can be found at the Kansas Cyclist website and at the eRow Podcast Network on the web at epn.ero.com. In each episode of the Kansas Cyclist Podcast, we will recap news and information about bicycling, talk about upcoming rides, let you in on new trails to try, listen to your feedback, answer your questions, and interview interesting individuals involved in bicycling here in the heartland of the United States. We welcome your feedback, so please write to podcast@kansascyclist.com and send in your comments or suggestions. Welcome back to Episode 3 of the Kansas Cyclist Podcast. We would like to thank all our listeners, and we do appreciate those that have taken the time to provide us feedback, as it is very helpful. Our first section is news and information. Randy, as always, has lots of new information on the Kansas Cyclist website. Randy, how about some highlights since Episode 2?
Well, with maybe in Bike Month, there's quite a bit going on, so I'm going to try to hit the highlights. First off, we have the League of American Bicyclists, who have announced their latest awards for bicycle-friendly communities. And there's some good news from our neighbors. Cedar Falls, Iowa, and Tulsa, Oklahoma, gained bronze-level status, while Columbia, Missouri, skipped right over bronze to attain the silver, which is quite a coup. No new awardees were announced for Kansas, but our two current bike-friendly communities, Lawrence and Shawnee, retained their bronze-level status. We want to congratulate the new cities who've been named as bicycle-friendly communities. They were each the first cities in their states to be recognized, which is pretty cool.
It is very cool.
The league also updated their rankings of bike-friendly states, and there it's a bit of good news, bad news. On the downside, Kansas dropped from 25 to 33. But Iowa took a big leap from 21 all the way up to 6. It was also good news for Colorado, which was up 9 places to number 13, and Missouri, which made a big jump as well from 28 to 17. On the other side of the rankings, Nebraska, Arkansas, and Oklahoma didn't fare so well. They brought up the rear at numbers 37, 38, and 48, respectively. Again, congrats to Iowa, Colorado, Missouri for their improvements. And here in Kansas, it looks like we have some work to do to bring a ranking up.
Randy, did Kansas go down because the other states were moving up? In other words, was it a relative ranking? Do you know?
It's a little hard to say. The Bike League doesn't provide a whole lot of details about the process, at least as far as reasons for individual movements up and down.
I see. It just seems logical that that might be a cause.
I suspect that's right, yeah. And speaking of Colorado, we have some really positive news on the advocacy front there. Colorado's bicycle safety bill, which had been slowly making its way through the state House and Senate, finally was approved by the legislature and was signed into law by the governor last week. It will go into effect on August 5th, and the major points of the bill are that it provides for a 3-foot passing distance, allows motorists to cross the center line when passing a bicyclist if it's safe to do so, and makes it a misdemeanor for a motorist to harass a cyclist by throwing something at them or by driving their car in a threatening manner. The bill also clarifies some legal language in the state statutes regarding lane positioning and the ability to ride two abreast when not impeding traffic.
That is wonderful news.
It is. I hope we can get something like that in Kansas one day. And back in Kansas, the city of Manhattan, which is home to Kansas State University, has gained a second bike shop. Big Poppy Bicycle Company opened in early May, joining the Pathfinder bike shop, which has been a mainstay of the scene there for years. I spoke with one of the new owners of the shop, and it sounds like they're not just opening a new business, but they're trying to become a force in the local community with plans to start a recreational bike club and possibly host some events. We hope to talk with them on a future podcast and learn more about what's going on in Manhattan.
Actually, the person you talked to is Aaron Appel, who is actually the son of Alan, who we'll be interviewing today.
That's right. In Kansas City, the annual Car Free Challenge took place last week. And this year, despite some really challenging weather, they had nearly 650 registered riders who racked up over 21,000 miles and replaced more than 2,600 car trips. Environmentally, they calculate that this amounts to a savings of over 1,200 gallons of gasoline and 20,000 fewer pounds of carbon dioxide spewed into the atmosphere. The top team was once again Team Garmin, and the top individuals were Chris Locke and Karina West. Also in KC, the mayor held a press conference during Bike Week where he announced the city's new bicycle pedestrian plan. The plan, which has already been approved by the city council, provides a framework and recommendations for ongoing improvements in policies, education, and infrastructure. Spearheading the new plan is the city's bicycle and pedestrian coordinator, Deb Ridgway, who you'll hear from a bit later in this podcast, with details about KC's plan to attain bicycle-friendly community status.
And finally in the news, sad news, the JCBC, or the Johnson County Bike Club, and the bicycling community of Kansas City has lost more than a friend with the recent passing of William Bill Marsh. Bill was a regular volunteer for the Johnson County Bike Club over his many years of membership. He handed out thousands of snacks and sandwiches at SAG stops, assisted Wayland bicyclists along the road as a roving SAG, motivating new riders to carry on to the end, or helping them through those early rides in whatever way that they needed help. Bill had a selfless personality and frequently spoke up at for bicyclists at various advocacy events around Johnson County. Many may not know his name, but know his smile and words of encouragement. His legacy, the Bill's Burrito Blast, is a permanent part of the JCBC history and remains the longest-running regular weekend ride. For many members, Bill's Burrito Blast was their first experience on a JCBC ride. Bill's consistently pleasant, patient demeanor was a perfect match for the broad mix of bicyclists that participated in the blast ride. Services were held for Bill on Saturday, May 2nd. We say goodbye and a big thank you to a dear friend of cycling in Kansas.
Amen.
To keep up with the latest bicycling news from Kansas and neighboring states, please subscribe to the Kansas Cycling News at the KansasCyclist.com website. You can subscribe using the RSS feed reader or email. Yeah. Our next section is the upcoming rides. There are many rides that are detailed at the Kansas Cyclist webcast. So, Randy, what do you have this week that is interesting?
Well, again, with maybe in National Bike Month, one of the activities during the month is the annual Ride of Silence, which is a silent, slow-paced ride to honor cyclists who have been injured or killed while riding their bikes on public roadways. The ride takes place on May 20th at 7 p.m. at locations nationwide, including many communities in our region. For details about where you can find a local ride, you can visit Kansas Cyclist or rideofsilence.org. Other rides coming up in the last half of May include the Cottonwood 200 out of Topeka this coming weekend, and Cycle Casa in Manhattan, the Tour de Cure in El Dorado, the Lone Star Century in Gardner, and the Dirty Kanza gravel race in Emporia, all of which take place in the last weekend of May. June is the real kickoff to touring season here in the Midwest. The big one as far as Kansas goes is Biking Across Kansas. This week-long tour starts at Syracuse this year, near the Colorado border, on June 6th and ends in Lewisburg on the 13th. In between, it takes a meandering route through the south-central part of the state, with overnights in Garden City, Jetmore, St. John, Halstead, Eureka, Humboldt, and Paola, for a total of about 532 miles. If you've never ridden BAK, you should really make the time to do so at least once. I've done the 2006 and 2008 rides, and they were really a lot of fun. It didn't work out for me this year, but I hope to ride it again in the future. And if you wait until the last minute to make up your mind, well, it's too late. Their registration is now closed, and you'll have to wait till next year.
What do they limit it to?
I believe it's around 800.
800. Yeah, and I thought next year maybe we could both ride and we could do live interviews for the podcast. That would be a lot of fun.
That sounds like an interesting idea. Two other early June rides are the Oklahoma Freewheel and the Bicycle Ride Across Nebraska. Like BAK, both of these are week-long cross-state tours. I haven't done either one, but they're definitely on my list. Late June brings more touring opportunities, including the Border Raiders, the Ride the Rockies out of Colorado, the Tour to Nebraska, and the Bicycle Tour of Colorado. Then in July comes the granddaddy of all cross-state tours, the Register's annual Great Ride Across Iowa, or RAGBRAI. And finally, a brief note about the Border Raiders Tour. This week-long ride begins and ends in Lawrence, Kansas, which makes the logistics really simple. The ride wanders north to Nebraska, east to Iowa, south through Missouri, then back to Kansas. My understanding is that there's still some room on this ride, and they're not yet sold out, so if you're looking for a summer tour and haven't committed to one yet, you should give the Border Raiders some consideration.
Sounds like fun.
It does.
And remember, for a complete listing of upcoming rides and races, visit the events section of the Kansas Cyclist website. Randy has numerous listings and a lot more details and ways that you can sign up for events with also registration links. So be sure to visit the website. Our next section is New Trails to Try. And like so much other information, Randy has links to almost all the riding trails in Kansas and adjoining states on the website. Randy, are there any that you would like to detail for our listeners today?
Actually, I have a couple trails I want to discuss. In the last podcast, I talked about the new trail system in place in the town of Melbourne, Kansas. And I had a chance to check out this in person myself, and I have to say I was pretty impressed. This is a really tiny town. It's just over 400 people, but the trail system is top-notch. It was raining the day I visited, so I didn't ride the whole thing, which is supposed to be about 7 miles. But what I saw was really scenic, with a wide gravel trail right along the Martesine River and interconnected mountain bike trails running up and down the bluffs. The trails appear to be in really good shape, and there are lots of signs to help you find your way. In addition, you can pick up a free trail map at the self-serve kiosk at the trailhead. It's really nice. The other trail I had a chance to check out was the Linear Trail in Manhattan. This is a multi-use pathway that follows the courses of three waterways: Wildcat Creek, the Big Blue River, and the Kansas River. The surface of the trail is a mixture of pavement and gravel, and it's about 9 miles in length, though I only rode about 7 miles of it. Most of the trail was in great condition, but there were two somewhat sketchy sections. At one point, the trail winds through a sort of industrial area, jumping from a separated trail to city streets and sidewalks, then back to the trail. This part was a little confusing, and the signage could have been better. The other iffy section was a creek crossing. This was a low water type of crossing rather than a bridge. And there was some fresh mud and some dried mud making for a really rough crossing. But other than that, the trail was in great condition and appeared to be really popular with walkers, joggers, folks with dogs, and families riding bikes together. I also saw some single track heading off into the woods at several points, and I was sorely tempted. But I was riding with a group, so I guess I'll have to go back and check out those some other time. And I think it's worth going back, both to ride the linear trail again and to check out the single track and other trails around that area. There's actually quite a few. I suggest you check it out the next time you're headed that way.
It always makes me so jealous that Randy and I talk every week and sometimes multiple times a week, and he's always out. He's got the greatest job. He works out of his house, so that's why he can't do bike to work, because he's right there, unless you have a stationary bike in your office there, Randy, and you can add those miles, right? but I'm always so jealous because he's out, and I have the type of job where I'm traveling a lot. These days I'm spending time in Jefferson City, Missouri. But the nice thing is I've hooked up with the Jefferson City cyclists, so they have a neat way to sign up. It's called VeloCal, and so I hope to be joining them on some rides during the time that I'm over here.
Maybe you can get some info on what the scene is like there.
Yeah, I hope to. There's new. I've signed up for the rides, and they must have 5 to 6 a week that you could do. Some on the weekends, but I'm usually here during the week. So
I'd be interested to hear about how many riders they have, and do they have a club and all that kind of stuff.
Well, they actually had a club, but it disbanded, because that's the first place that I looked and was following some links, but that is no longer here, and I think it had to do with just the differences between what some of the cycling needs were. There were some a lot of racers to regular riders, and then some mountain bikers, but because they had a website and everything, but it was all down, and I had to do some checking through the local bike shops. So it seems like these are well attended, at least the number of people that are signed up. So we'll see.
All right, sounds cool.
We have a new feature that we are starting with this episode, which we are calling On the Scene, where we do on-the-spot interviews while out and about or at specific events. On the evening of May 5th, Randy and I attended the Missouri chapter of the Sierra Club meeting at the Discovery Center in Kansas City, Missouri, where Deb Ridgway, bicycle and pedestrian coordinator for the City of Kansas City, Missouri, provided an update on biking and walking projects in the city. Last May 2008, Mayor Mark Funkhauser announced the city's desire to achieve platinum-level designation as a bicycle-friendly community by the League of American Bicyclists by 2020. This level of achievement has been reached by only 3 other cities: Davis, California, Portland, Oregon, and Boulder, Colorado. The League has a multi-step process to obtain this status, and Deb outlined the 10 steps that Kansas City is working on to achieve this platinum status. Before Deb started her position as the bicycle and pedestrian coordinator for Kansas City, she worked with several not-for-profit organizations over the past 24 years on issues concerning transportation and social and environmental justice. She has provided consulting services to municipalities, not-for-profits, and professional associations for the past 14 years, and Deb is a member of the Association of Pedestrian and Bicycle Professionals and the American Public Works Association. Deb, we had a question. It's wonderful, the plan that you have going for to go for a bicycle-friendly community by 2020. And you went over a 10-step process. Which areas do you think will be the most difficult to obtain, and which may be the easiest?
Ooh, good question. Some of the most difficult are going to be the actual construction of the facilities, because we don't have a dedicated funding source. So that we'll have to continue to do on sort of a piece-by-piece small basis until we can figure out how we do that on a bigger scale. Some of the easy things are things that have already sort of taken hold in the community, like the education, outreach kinds of events like Bike Week, the Car Free Challenge, things of that nature, where the Tour of Missouri. We have a lot of local cycling clubs that are very active and engaged, and those are some easy things. And of course, as I mentioned in the presentation, the KCATA being fully equipped with the bike carriers on the bus. So we've already won that one.
You said there's going to be an announcement on the 11th?
Yes, May 11th, Mayor Funkhauser will hold a news conference at the Power and Light District, 9 a.m., under the canopy to unveil what will become our annual bike and pedestrian-friendly community action plan. So he will be unveiling the steps and some of their goals and how we're going to achieve that.
And then you said the 14th is when it's formally presented at the City Council?
Yes, it will be introduced by Councilman Johnson at a City Council meeting on Thursday, I think it's the 14th of May, and hopefully will pass.
Do you have an estimate on the cost of being in compliance with all this, and where would the funding come from?
Oh, that's a tough question. I don't know that I have the answer for that. One of the things the Trails KC plan did was identify some of the potential costs. Unfortunately, I don't have that number in my head. but, you know, $1.7 million on the Bike KC side has gotten 205 miles of signed routes and hazard mitigation and bike racks. And that gets us a third of the way through that plan. So that gives you some sense of what the cost of Bike KC is with 600 miles of on-road.
You said Kansas City is going to make their application for bicycle-friendly community this fall. What realistic time frame is there for Kansas City to get awarded something?
Well, there, as I said, they're reviewed on an ongoing basis, or the applications are accepted, rather, on an ongoing basis. They're reviewed three times a year. There'll be a fall review. I'm not sure how long it takes the league to sort of review the application. I know they'll contact local bike clubs and organizations to sort of get different perspectives on the application. And I'm very hopeful. I think we've done a lot on this that'll be 2 years out for me in terms of being on the job and getting some things built. We'll have that 205 miles of on-street done. We'll have our 35 miles of trails in. So I'm hopeful. I think we've done some good work.
Is there funding once you become designated? I heard you throw out this $20 million figure, and I wasn't quite sure whether that was money that came in after you got your designation, or is that a grant before?
No, the $20 million, I was referencing an earmark, a federal earmark that went out to four communities across the country for them to improve their biking and walking facilities in their cities. That was a one-time special award through the federal transportation policy. Don't think those numbers are coming back our way anytime soon.
I see. Is the plan is for 2020. Would there be a possibility that you could apply for certain pieces of that and getting bronze level, silver level?
Yeah, that's the goal, is that we won't become platinum overnight. You sort of work your way up the chain. Chicago has been at, I think, gold for a number of years, but yet, you know, they've done a whole lot more than we have. Shawnee, Kansas, is bronze, and they really would like to become silver. So it's something that you have to constantly be working at, constantly have a plan towards increasing your mileage and continuing to build your system, your bikeway system. And, you know, it's those 10 steps are very broad encompassing. And so it's going to take a while. I think, you know, 12 years is ambitious to do this by 2020. But I think it's doable if we stay focused. And we've made some great steps just in this last year. We've made a lot of progress.
We had also heard, we interviewed Eric Rogers, and he had said there's the possibility of actually applying with some of the border cities. Is that part of the plan, or would it just be for Kansas City, Missouri?
Right now, we are just going to be applying as the city. I do know that there are some Johnson County, Kansas communities that have expressed an interest in sort of some of those smaller communities. I know Roland Park and Fairway and Mission Hills and some of those have expressed an interest in doing something that is more of a collaborative. East Pima County, Arizona, I think is the only one that has a regional designation from the league. So that's kind of what their inspiration is for that.
I see. And Deb, you said you're, on a personal level, you said you're new to this.
Yeah, I'm new to the city. I've just been in, this is a brand new position created at the city. So I'm the first and only person to hold the position of bike ped coordinator. Previous to that, I was working for Bridging the Gap, running their clean commute program. So I've been doing this kind of work for about the last 12, 13 years in various cities through the Midwest.
Well, it's great. Your enthusiasm is infectious, so good luck with things.
Thank you.
Since our first episode, we did hear back from a few of our listeners, and we want to thank all of those that take the time to provide this feedback, as we are very intent on improving the podcast and making it useful for everyone. We did not have any feedback from episode 2, so hopefully that is a good sign that we are meeting the needs of our listeners for news and information, as well as interesting interviews. With us today is Alan Appel. Alan was born and raised in Topeka, Kansas, and graduated from Topeka West High School. For his first year of college, he went to Tarkio College in Tarkio, Missouri, on a track scholarship. He returned to Topeka and finished up his college education at Washburn University with a degree in recreation. After finishing college, Alan worked for the Monmouth YMCA in Monmouth, Illinois. That is where he met his wife, Marie, and they have three children, Aaron, who is 24, Michael, who is 22, and Elizabeth, who is 16. From Monmouth, the Appel family moved to Joliet, Illinois, where he worked at the YMCA there for 1 year, and then moved back to Topeka and worked at the Kuhn branch of the YMCA for 2 years. Alan has an interest in computers, as he had been doing work for the YMCA on his Mac. He then took a position with a company called Budget Bytes and worked there for almost 2 years after leaving the Y. When Budget Bytes started having financial problems, he took a job with another company called Centrex doing training and support. Centrex was purchased by a group of investors and became the Centrex Group. And then when the investors left, the original owner purchased the company back and is now called SciTech Media Systems. SciTech provides audiovisual equipment for government and school systems. Alan has been an avid bicyclist for most of his life, along with several other sports. He has completed a number of century and week-long rides, including Ragbri, MS-150s, and numerous other area rides. He has also been active in the Kaw Valley Bicycle Club in Topeka for over 10 years. He is very interested in bicycle advocacy and has developed some proposed language for updating Kansas laws and statutes on bicycling by studying other states. Alan's proposal is detailed on the Kansas Cyclist website under the news section, and Randy will also have it linked in the show notes for this episode. Alan, welcome to the Kansas Cyclist podcast. We are so happy that you could join us today.
I'm glad to be here.
We noticed that from your bio that you actually went to college in your first year on a track scholarship. When did you first become interested in bicycling?
I've been bicycling for pretty much all my life. I mean, I remember having a bicycle, you know, an old coaster-type bicycle when I was a little kid. And I remember my first 10-speed was a Schwinn Varsity steel, couldn't kill it type bike. And just kind of progressed from there, getting a better bike as years gone by, and had done some long distance travels with a friend of mine, and so, you know, kind of been bicycling for years. And you know, I don't think there's any schools here in Kansas that have cycling teams and stuff, and so, you know, I was always in track and other sports and stuff, and so That's how I got a track scholarship. And
I see. Are you still running?
Nope. Mm-hmm. Too hard on the knees.
Yeah, that's exactly what happened to me 3 years ago. So
that's one of the reasons I kind of kept with the cycling is that, you know, I thought, you know, not as hard on the knees and could probably do it for a lot more years.
Yeah, I tell my running friends the same thing. How did you first become involved in bicycle advocacy, and what were the driving forces behind that? And was it your, you know, initial career in the recreation area that had anything to do with that?
Not, well, somewhat. I mean, basically, I was looking, or I was hearing people saying that, you know, Kansas has rules where you have to be 4 feet, 3 feet, you know, when you're passing a cyclist. And so I said, well, I'm going to find out if we actually have that, and started looking at the Kansas statutes and never could find anything. And so that led me to go into thinking maybe we need to get something going on this. And I didn't see anybody else proposing anything. And so I just kind of jumped in and found, you know, looking over, you know, looking at the web and stuff, trying to find, you know, some statutes that we might be able to use here in Kansas. And I found some, and I basically got those and emailed them to my state legislators and trying to get something going. And, you know, at this point in time, you know, still kind of in the, I want to call, you know, at the beginning level. I mean, it's out there, and, you know, more people are learning about it, of what I've proposed. And I'm not saying that that's everything we want to propose. I'm not saying it's the way we want things stated, but I wanted to get the dialogue going. And that was the whole purpose, was, you know, let's get something going. And if people are going, if people look at that and say, yeah, hey, these are great, then they need to be contacting their state legislators and saying, hey, we need to get these things implemented. And that's kind of how things got going.
How long ago did you start this process?
January is when I first emailed both my state legislators. And basically what's happened since then is I have gotten basically an email response saying thank you for sending me to this information, and that's all that's happened. And I think in order for something to happen here in Kansas, as I say, one person kind of shouting in a crowd isn't very loud, but if you can get a lot of people that, you know, start chanting the same thing, I think we can get some change going. And that's what I'm hoping is going to happen, is that more and more people will say, hey, we need to get this going. And, you know, and I think one of the things is maybe I haven't found, you know, trying to find maybe the right legislator to take this and run with it.
Have you been working with any of the cycling groups in the state to help you with this effort?
Not yet. I mean, as I say, I just kind of put it out there and was hoping, you know, other organizations would look at it and go, hey, you know, we agree with this. We want to get this going and stuff. And that's kind of what I'm hoping, is that we, you know, it kind of starts snowballing, and, you know, we get clubs to get behind it, and, you know, and get their members to contact people, and, you know, and just keep snowballing it like that, we get more and more people saying we needed to have this happen.
So when you started studying this, you actually looked at current law or statutes in the state. So I guess, what did you find? And let's specifically look at the things that you're interested, such as the, you know, the first one being the safe operating distance.
Yeah, I mean, the key thing was that I was hearing from other cyclists that said, oh yeah, we've got a thing that you know, they have to pass 4 feet from a cyclist. And so I started looking into that and found out that basically what it was that when you go in to get your driver's license renewed, You have to take a test, and there's a written test. And one of the questions now that's on the test is, you know, what is the safe distance to pass a cyclist? And part of that is because you have to, you know, you have to read the manual, and there is a whole section in the manual on bicycle safety. And it states in there that the safe distance is 4 feet from the bicyclist. The problem is that all that is it's a question that's on a test that somebody has to take when they renew their driver's license. There isn't a statute that says you have to be 4 feet from a bicycle. It's basically a suggestion. And so, you know, that holding up in court wouldn't hold up very well. I mean, somebody could, you know, a person in a car could pass somebody and clip them, and they could say, well, you know, you're supposed to be 4 feet, and they, you know, they'd say, well, what statute is that? And there isn't a statute that says that they have to be 4 feet. All it is it's a suggestion in the driver's manual in renewing your driver's license.
And then, you know, how often do people have to renew their license to even remember that, even if they could? I mean, I was out Saturday
and
had
you know,
the same
and
thing.
You know, do you remember the questions that you had on your last driver's test?
Right.
Is a key thing. And, you know, I don't want to put down the, you know, the person getting that done. You know, it's great that they got that in there so that people are aware that bicycles are a vehicle that are on the road and have rights the same as, you know, motor vehicles. But it's not helping, it's not helping us legally if, you know, something happens to a cyclist. And, you know, here in Topeka, a few years ago, I was clipped by a person. I didn't crash or anything. I was able to track the person down. Actually, I had somebody else in another vehicle that saw it happen and pursued the person and found them and stuff. And they were like, oh, well, didn't even know we hit you. And, you know, there wasn't really any legal action that could be taken with that, even when they, you know, when they hit me and stuff. And so, you know, and that, and you know, so if you look at, if, you know, anybody can go on the web and look up the state statutes on, you know, what they have for bicycles and stuff. And what you're going to find is a lot of lacking statutes that protect bicyclists. You know, we don't have anything, you know, one of the things that I proposed is the anti-harassment where, you know, right now somebody can drive by and throw something at you and, you know, cause you to wreck and you have no recourse to that person.
Mm-hmm. So on both of those, on safe operating and anti-harassment, have you looked at other states then on the language that you're proposing?
Yeah, I mean that's where, you know, the language that I had that I put out for the suggestions that I had, that's what I did was I went out and found those and you know, found some from some other states and that's kind of where I got the suggestions for these statutes that I thought would be nice to have implemented here in Kansas.
And specifically on safe operating distance, what are you proposing?
Basically, safe distance of not less than 3 feet,
mm-hmm.
and the reason why I'm saying 3 feet because that's more of a national. If you go out and you do a Google search on 3 feet, you know you're going to get all kinds of stuff. There's not very many states that have like 4 feet. I think there's a state that's proposing like 5 feet, and in fact, that's in Iowa. They were proposing 5 feet, and I don't. You know, 5 feet would be great, also. But then I guess 3 feet, as I say, is more of a national that you see a lot more with, you know, people saying, you know, you need to be at least 3 feet.
Mm-hmm. And I think and this is very good because I think all of us have had this. I mean, just Saturday. I had a car come, you know, definitely closer than 3 feet, you know, and then sped around me and then turned right in front of me, which, you know, mm-hmm. the other. And then I haven't had anything thrown at me, thank goodness, but definitely the words and yelling out the window, of get off the road and that type of thing. So that's good. The other thing that you had looked at was clearer signaling for cyclists. What exactly are you looking at there?
Well, the signals that, bicyclists are supposed to use are ones that were developed for motor vehicles. And you basically are using your left arm for all the signals. And the reason for that is because the driver is, the steering wheel is on the left side of the car, and so you have to stick your left arm out. You can't stick your right arm out, they wouldn't see it in a car. And so your signals for turning left and turning right and everything are based on that. And they've done a lot of studies where they've found that, if you're needing to turn left and you point left, or if you're needing to turn right and you point right, that people understand that. And it's a clearer signal. And it's basically what the ordinance is saying is that a bicyclist can use either the, you might say, the old signal of using the left arm if they're turning right, with the hand up, or they can use their right hand and point to the right, basically saying, this is where I'm going, and making that, a legal signal that a cyclist can use.
Yeah, I think the other thing is that those hand signals were developed before we had turn signals, and a lot of younger drivers don't even know what you're talking about. I mean, and I in the groups that I go out with, people use both, but I definitely feel it's clearer, to use my right arm when I'm going right. So, is there anything existing in the statutes now in Kansas? Is it that you have to use your left arm?
Yeah, it's basically, I
Yep.
mean, if you look at any of the manuals, driver's manuals and stuff, and if they will show you the signals of basically using everything with your left arm.
This signaling for cyclists is one place where we have a bit of a conflict between the driver's license manual, or at least the Department of Transportation, and the actual statutes. The bicycling section on the Department of Transportation website actually shows a cyclist using the right hand signal, and they indicate that's okay. And the
Right, but
statutes
again,
actually.
it's not a state statute, and so the problem is you when you start getting into the court of law, and they say, well, you didn't use the right signal, and so, that's where you run into the problem. Is there not, if it's not a statute or something, lawyers can twist those things around, and then it leaves the cyclist out in the cold.
Right. So what we're looking here for here is mostly a clarification, bringing
Right,
the
basically
statutes up
saying,
to date.
this is okay for a cyclist to do this. It's a legal way to signal, and if they use that, and something happens to a cyclist and they're using that and they go into the court of law, they can say, okay, this is a statute that says that they can use that, and that puts a little on a little firmer ground in helping, a cyclist if they have to go into court.
One of the other issues you talked about in your proposal was clarification of lane positioning. You want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, it's basically that having to use the staying as far to the right and making that a little more clear that, if there's potholes or stuff, the road condition is not good, that you don't have to be as far to the right as possible, that you are allowed to be actually in the lane. A lot of cyclists tend to either hug the white line, or if there actually is a gutter or area that, to the right of the white line, they sometimes want to ride over there. And the problem is you get into an area where, you know, if you have a white line and the cyclist is right on that white line, it doesn't give them, you know, if it's a windy day or a big truck goes by, you know, and you get that wind gust, it doesn't give you the room to be able to maneuver. And as an LCI, you know, they teach you that you do what they call take a lane, which basically you make sure you're in the lane so people see you. And that's one of the other things is when cyclists are further to the right, then your motor vehicles a lot of times don't see the cyclist, where if they're out actually in the lane, then they're seen better, which actually protects them better because they can actually, you know, a motorist can see them. Plus it gives them the room, you know, if they have to maneuver because of something in the road, that they've got room to maneuver. And you know, we were taught that basically you could be 3 feet from the edge of the road. The edge of the road, key thing there is the edge of the road is not the gutter. A lot of people think, okay, that the edge of the road is your curb, you know, and you're 3 feet, and it's actually the, you know, if you take your gutter, which is a lot of times maybe a foot in, you can be 3 feet from there.
Like the white line, if it's on a highway, you'd actually be able to be 3 feet in.
3 feet from that white line, yeah, you can be to the left of that right line, which is basically, you know, if you're on a road, it's where the right tire of a car would probably be traveling in the road for most vehicles. And that's kind of the area that you can be in. And it's just, you know, it's basically the statute that I was suggesting was that, you know, if you need to be farther than 3 feet in, you can. I mean, there's... today, for example, I rode out to Lake Shawnee on 29th Street here in Topeka, and, you know, part of the road, I was in the middle of the road because on the right side of the road, it was so torn up that, you know, it was impossible to ride over there. And, you know, right now, they can basically say, well, you're supposed to be as far to the right as you can be. And it's more of a clarification so that... you know, if there is a problem, a legal problem, that it, you know, it can be taken care of legally, hopefully, if the cyclist goes into court.
And that's true even, like, a lot of the roads around here in the Kansas City area, there are some cities, Olathe, Shawnee, that have done a lot of bicycle lanes, which are nice, mm-hmm. but they tend to get a lot of garbage and stuff over there, so you're kind of weaving or having to get over in the road. So I think this would help clarify that too, because if there's an obstruction, I can't be over there.
Right.
Is this another instance where the driver's license manual is a little bit ahead of this actual statutes? I believe the driver's license manual says specifically that a bicyclist is entitled to the full use of the lane.
Yeah, but again, this is making a little more clarification to that, so that you know, if there is a question about it, that this clarifies it just a little more.
Right. Another
and
item.
It also gets into you know, passing, you know, being able to pass, you know, somebody else going the same direction and stuff, that they can go out farther into the lane and stuff to do that.
Another item you have on your list is the elimination of mandatory side path law. Can you explain that?
Basically, there, and this sometimes kind of gets into local ordinances and stuff, but some places basically say if there is a side path or a bike path that's right next to the roadway, that you have to ride on that bike path. For example, I believe over in Lawrence, you know, you've got the Clinton Parkway that has a bike path on both sides, and legally, you're supposed to ride on those bike paths and not in the road because they're there. And it's basically a saying you don't have to do that. You are a legal vehicle that can be on the road, and it's not mandatory that you have to be on a bike path. And some of that, you know, here in Topeka, for example, they have an ordinance that you're not allowed to ride, which I agree with, you're not allowed to ride your bicycle in, on sidewalks downtown. And
right.
stuff. And so, you know, this is kind of clarifying, again, clarifying that, you know, you don't have to be on those side paths. Because there are a lot of people, you know, there's a lot of people that, feel that, you know, if there's a sidewalk, that's where the cyclist should be. And,
yeah.
you know, you hear that, especially, you know, in town and stuff, you'll hear that a lot where somebody will come up and tell you to, you know, hey, why aren't you over on the sidewalk instead of in the street?
And I think the real clarification is not so much the sidewalk. I mean, I talked about the bike lanes, which is different, but then you have sometimes you'll be riding along and there will be a bike path over there, but then that's weaving all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's, you know, pedestrians plus dogs and everything else over there.
I think part of the problem is also kind of a vagueness in the phrasing on the actual statutes currently. It says, whenever there's a usable path for bicycles has been provided adjacent to a roadway, bicycle riders must use that path and cannot use the roadway. That, I think
right,
that
and you, and the
term is really vague.
And the problem that's run into in some other states is where the bike path is in worse condition than the road. And so then, you know, is it safe for the bicyclist to be over in a bike lane that they could possibly get injured on or be in the street? And, you know, it's basically saying, well, that, you know, it should be up to the bicyclist to determine, you know, whether they need to be on the bike path or in the street. And, you know, and the weird statistic that they have found with bike paths and stuff is that bicyclists are, I think the last one I heard was around 1,500% greater chance of getting injured on a bike path than in the street. And most people hear that and they go, well, that seems completely opposite of what you would think. You would think they would be safer on a bike path than they would in the street. The problem you have on a bike path is used not only by cyclists, but you have people who are walking, people who have their dogs. Here in Topeka, we've got a bike path that goes right by some soccer fields that, you know, families are coming out watching a soccer game and the siblings are over on the bike path and stuff. And so, you know, and people aren't looking for bicyclists and stuff. And so you end up with, you know, a potential of greater injury.
The other thing is some of the trails aren't even really designed for bikes. They're more for walking, even though they say bicycling. I mean, I've been on some where they're taking these hairpin turns, and then you take a hairpin turn, and then you're heading straight uphill, and you're in the
right.
wrong gear, you know.
Mm-hmm.
The other issue with using a multi-use path on a bike is that these often cross many more intersections than the road does. It's just driveways and parking lots and all that kind of
right.
stuff.
And that's why it becomes a greater potential for injury to a cyclist, because they're, you know, they're they may be whipping through on that bike path, and you know, cars and stuff aren't looking for them.
Right. They're not expecting something moving that fast to be on the sidewalk.
Correct.
Right. What does your proposal say about penalties for violating the statutes?
Well, basically trying to increase them. I think, you know, I basically said that, you know, minor injury can be assessed a civil fine of up to $500. If it's greater, greater bodily injury, the bicyclist can assist civil fine of more than $1,000. And, that number, I've talked to some other people and they're saying, that's kind of low. Maybe, that maybe it should be a lot higher. I mean, I even did some checking on, one of the things you see a lot is for highway workers and stuff. If, like in Missouri, if you injure or kill a highway construction worker, you can be fined up to $10,000. And, and I kind of started seeing that and was like, well, maybe we should increase that more than 500 and 1,000 and make it a little, if you make it to where, people realize that, it's going to cost you money, because a lot of people will go, oh, $500, I'll just pay that. And, you might say, make them really think about what's happened, if you put a greater fine on it and stuff. And I think it carries a little more weight, too, when you have a greater fine.
Yeah, definitely the 10,000 gets
kinda,
your attention.
Kind of one of those things, you get a parking ticket and it's $3.
Yeah.
And you go, okay, well, that's not that big of a deal. But if you get a parking fine and it's $50, then it starts kind of hurting a little more. And you probably wouldn't, illegally park again.
We were talking to, in the last podcast, Dale Crawford, who, done a lot of advocacy work for the Johnson County Bike Club. And I think one of the other issues that he brought up, too, is that a lot of the laws are built around that you're, if something would happen, you're hitting another car. Well, you might cause damage to the car, but you're not causing bodily injury, where, mm-hmm. It's absolutely unforgiving on a cycle. So if someone's, not paying attention or texting or talking on the phone, it's much dire consequences than hitting the car in front of them.
Correct.
Yeah.
And that's why, and as I say, the fines are, again, I think all the statutes are a beginning point, and that's why I want to get more dialogue on all of them, get people looking at them and going, well, this is great, but it'd be really maybe better if we did, if we added this, or, if the fines were, instead of 500, maybe they were 5,000, and those types of things, so that we can possibly have some really good statutes that get implemented here in Kansas.
Mm-hmm. You had, one of the other things you had is a definition of a bicycle. You want to explain that?
Basically, that was to explain more that, a bicycle can be operated by more than one person, and also gets into, adult tricycles and stuff like that, so that they would also be covered by the statutes. Right now, I believe that, the definition of a bicycle is, a non-motorized vehicle with two wheels. And, you've got recumbents that have three wheels. You've got adult tricycles that, that have three wheels and stuff. And, technically under the statutes, if something happened, they could technically not be covered.
I see. So it's more of a clarification of what is a bicycle.
Right, right.
Alan, what are some of the things that we can do as cyclists or cyclist responsibilities with these statutes? Because you hear a lot of complaints from people driving, and I see it too with some cyclists. Now here with the bicycle club and the rides that I do, we say we're adhering to the Johnson County bike rules that you will wear helmets, you will stop at stop signs. Now, we say stopping at a stop sign is not coming to a complete stop every time, but at least, slowing down, looking both ways, but, adhering to the laws. So, what are the cyclist responsibilities here?
Well, I think that that's the biggest thing is to remember that they are a vehicle on the road, and they have to obey by the rules of the road. The biggest problem is there is such a large gamut of how people see bicycles on the road. You see some bicyclists, or let me say put it this way, you see a person on a bicycle, I won't call them a bicyclist, but you see a person on a bicycle, they're on the sidewalk going the opposite direction, or even in the road going the opposite direction, you know, towards traffic, thinking that they're like a pedestrian that's supposed to be on the side of the road, you know, walking towards traffic, thinking, okay, I'm a cyclist or on a bicycle, I'm supposed to be doing the same thing as a pedestrian. And so, you know, that's the key thing, is getting everybody to understand that, you know, a cyclist, you know, a person on a bicycle should be on the road and be, you know, taken as a vehicle on the road and should adhere to all the rules and regulations that a motor vehicle has to abide with also. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and that's the only way. It's a two-way street. If we, you know, we have to respect the motorists, and we need to get the motorists to respect us. And, you know, if we're doing stuff like blowing through red lights and, you know, and stop signs and, you know, and not using signals and stuff like that, then, you know, that puts a bad taste in a motorist's mouth about, you know, their feelings about a cyclist. And I think those are some of the best things that a cyclist can do is, you know, remember that they are a vehicle on the road.
Right. I think you put it well by the term respect. I think that's exactly what it is, respecting both ways. Alan, you're still looking for input on these from the bicycle community. How much have you received as far as feedback so far?
Not a lot. I think it's just kind of getting out there that I you might say I've done this. You know, you picked it up for the Kansas Cyclist, and you know, we put it in the Call Valley Bicycle Club that, you know, I proposed it, but I really haven't gotten a lot of feedback on, you know, from anybody. And, you know, to say any feedback that I can get would be helpful, and anything that somebody can suggest on, you know, helping, you might say, to move this forward on what we need to do and stuff would be also helpful. And, you know, because, you know, I think it needs to keep being pushed. I mean, I think for anything to get done through the legislature, you know, one person doing it, you know, may not have a lot of effect, but if we, you know, if we start, you know, getting more people talking about it and making these suggestions and stuff, and, you know, and getting something put together, then I think we have a better chance of possibly getting something actually passed.
Yeah, good. And we're glad to, hopefully on the podcast here, that'll help get the word out too. What do you see? Is there a deadline that you're looking at as far as when, you know, the next steps in this legislative process? And, you know, have you looked at some possible sponsors for the legislation? I know you said you were, you know, sent to your local legislator, but have you found anybody yet? And
no. Mm-hmm. Have not. And you know, again, it's I don't know the whole process of that. I know we've Cam Bike Walk had a day when they went up and talked with legislators, and I know they were showing them the proposals and stuff, and so again, it's somebody taking the ball and running with it is the key thing, or, you know, again, getting some other clubs and stuff in the state to really start, you know, again, picking up the ball and maybe helping and trying to get something pushed through. I know other states that have tried to put stuff through. It's taken 2-3 even more, you know, years to kind of get something put through. Because it's one of those things where, you know, you got to get something written up, and then it's got to go through, you know, committees and you know, go through the House and go through the Senate, and it may get bounced back and forth, and then it, you know, depending on whether or not it even gets up for a vote 1 year, you know, and maybe put off till the next year and stuff. And so, you know, I don't have a timeline, and I think the key thing is just to kind of keep pushing on it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it's a great start. I mean, there's some good language here, and I think we all need to provide that input. So I ask our listeners to do that too with Alan. And there is directions on the Kansas Cyclist website with all the details of these proposals and how you can get a hold of Alan.
Alan, we wanted to talk to you about your LCI certification. Could you kind of go through that process and tell us how it works and what you do?
Okay. Basically, it started out with you. The first thing you have to do is take what is known as a Road 1 test or course. It's an all-day course and basically goes over, you know, basic bicycle maintenance and, you know, riding on the road and safety and all that kind of stuff. And once you've passed that, then you can go and do an LCI training. And that's normally, it's a whole weekend. The one that I went to was down in Springfield, and we had to go down. Me and Brent Greenwood went down, and we had to go down on a Friday. We had to be there fairly early on a Friday, and so it was, you know, Friday evening, all day Saturday, and all day Sunday for the training and stuff. And then there was a test and stuff that we had to take and stuff. And that's basically how you become certified. And once you become certified, then that gives you the capability of doing, like, Road 1 trainings and stuff for the community or, you know, really any place in the United States that you want to, if you want to travel and do that.
How often do you have to renew that certification?
You have to pay to get it renewed. I mean, there's no annual test or anything like that that you have to do. I have to pay an annual fee to keep my LCI certification. And I've been doing that. I wanted the club here in Topeka to, you know, to have an LCI, and we tried to get some classes going. I tried to get a class going. The city of Topeka wanted to put a class together. They only had one person that signed up. But it's one of those things that, you know, possibly if we get more people bicycling, it might be one of those courses that we can have a few more people want to participate in.
You have anything scheduled coming up?
No. The city's actually going to try and have another class in the fall. I don't think we've set the official date on that yet, but they're going to look at something in the fall because I think they still would like to do that.
How do you sell that to people? I mean, what is the attraction for your average bicycle rider to go to the class?
Well, it's basically learning bicycle safety, how to do, you know, things like the what they call an ABC quick check. I don't know if you've ever heard of that. It's basically anytime you get ready to do a ride, you're supposed to do an ABC quick check, which is checking your air, your brakes, your cables, and your quick release to make sure those are all functioning correctly, or, you know, air's correct in your tires and stuff like that. Before you go on a ride, to make sure you don't run into any mechanical problems when you're on your ride. You learn things like a quick stop, how to do quick turns, a few things like that can help a cyclist, you know, avoid a hazard or an accident, and what they can do. And those are some of the things that kind of go over in the course.
Are the classes aimed more towards beginner cyclists, or can experienced riders get something out of this as well?
Oh, I think any cyclist can get something out of it. And they've just renamed them. They used to be called Road 1. They're now called Traffic 101, Traffic Skills 101. and they've just released Traffic Skills 102, which is kind of more of an advanced class. But you have to do the 101 to get to the 102.
Do you know how many LCIs there are in the state of Kansas?
Not very many. I think there's one in Kansas City. There may be one down in Wichita. There's only a handful that are in this area. And that was one of the reasons that we were, Call Valley was looking at having some LCIs, because there wasn't very many in the state. And we thought, it'd be a good thing to have.
I just did the gravel conspiracy ride in Manhattan yesterday, and I had a chance to talk with your son Aaron, who's just started a new bike shop, Big Poppy Bicycle Company, there in Manhattan. I haven't checked it out yet, but it sounds pretty neat. Are you planning on doing any bike education work in Manhattan through the shop?
Aaron has mentioned it to me, and I said, we can set something up and work something out. I'd be more than willing to go over there and, and help him out if possible and stuff. And so he's just, as I say, just trying to get the store going, and, he's got a lot of ideas, what things he'd like to do and stuff. And, if I can help him, I'd be more than willing to.
That's great that he's started a cycle shop, so it's staying in the family here, huh?
Yeah, you might say that. He went on a MS-150 with me when he was like 11, 12 years old, and I don't know if that got the bicycling bug into him or not, but, he kind of found out what a long ride was like, and had kind of been bicycling on and off, and then when he was in college, he was needing a job and had gone into Pathfinder there in Manhattan, and they kind of asked him what he knew, and, he kind of knew some basics on bicycle maintenance and stuff, and, they said, well, they thought they could use him, and he was there for a couple of years and picked up a lot of knowledge and stuff, and was kind of really got into bicycling at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And stuff, and so kind of taking his dream and going with it at this point.
That's cool.
You had, I noticed in your bio, you have done a number of long rides. How many Ragbri have you done?
I've just done one Ragbri. Actually, me and Aaron went up there last year. We just went up for a day and rode one day because he'd never been to the Ragbri. And, I tell people, I say, if you've never been to a Ragbri, you need to go up and at least go one day just so you can experience it. It's, you don't understand it, having 10,000 bicyclists and on the road, and just the seeing that many bicyclists all over the place, and you just have to go up and experience. Even if you can just experience it for one day, it's really neat.
Mm-hmm.
And so yeah, we went up that one day, stayed overnight, and then rode one day and stayed another night, and came back the next day.
Have you did what other long distance rides have you done?
When I was younger, there was a couple of places that did some week-long rides, some church camps and stuff that I did some week-long rides, and I've done some centuries and stuff. I've done the MS-150 now for, I think it's like 14, 15 years, and stuff. And so, and I've done a lot of local rides. I've done like the Lizard and Octogenta and did Cabin Fever, been doing that for the last few years, and Yellow Brick Road. And so, done a lot of local rides and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Well, Alan, thank you again for being with us, and thanks for taking this action, because it very much is needed, and we wish you the very best of luck as you move the legislation changes and clarifications forward, and please do keep us posted, and we hope that we can have you back the day these changes all get written into law.
Well, thanks for having me. I've enjoyed talking to you guys.
We appreciate you downloading episode 3 of the Kansas Cyclist Podcast. and we do hope that you will subscribe to our podcast so that you will not miss out on future episodes. We have a lot of interesting news and information and interviews that we have planned for future episodes, so please do come back. Also, take the time and leave your feedback by writing to podcast@kansascyclist.com. Remember, there are show notes for each podcast on the website, which includes links to all the news, rides, and trails that have been discussed. Take care and cycle safe.